This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you. Meet Kate.
A few words to describe Over the Influence. Funny, fabulous, informative, supportive, and I think the most important one for me, community. I will be a year alcohol-free in September, and it's the best thing I've ever done. And I think Over the Influence has been one of my biggest tools in my toolkit for if I'm having a wobble or if I just need just that little nudge, that little bit of support. I would highly, highly recommend it.
So if you want to join us, go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence. It is fantastic to have you listening. Thank you so much. If you are joining us for the very first time, where have you been for the last 2 years? There's so much to go at. A brief reintroduction as to who we are. My name is Sharon Hartley. I have been singing about sobriety on this podcast for the last 2 years. I am now 3 years, 6 or 7 months alcohol free. Our guest will put me right in a sec. He will know, I am sure, because he's exactly 6 months behind me. I used to be a daily drinker, stopped drinking in September 2018. I was 44 years old when I thought I would go into, I was just going to take a break from drinking, had no plans to stop, had no plans for this to become an alcohol-free lifestyle. It has done. It's been hands down the best thing I have ever done. Safe to say, absolutely flipping life-changing. And we love singing about sobriety on this podcast. We share the rubbish bits as well. We talk about it all. I do not do this on my own. My co-host today is Ben. Ben, how are you doing?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Just today, or can I come back next week?
We'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, it's also quite new for us, isn't it?
If you're a regular
listener, you will know. So I'm Ben. I am coming up to 2 years alcohol free. When this podcast started, I wasn't alcohol free. I was dabbling with moderation. I thought I could do that whole moderation
thing.
turns out didn't go very well, but I've given up booze for good, and I love it. In fact, Shaz, today I got a message from a friend who I had no idea was giving alcohol-free life a try.
Really?
He messaged me just to go, out the blue, completely out of the blue. Oh, by the way, mate, you've inspired me. 98 days, and he sent me a photo of his app.
That's
98
nice.
Days sober. You never know who's listening
to
this. Oh,
that's
thing,
brilliant. Ben, the lighthouse.
The Lighthouse. If you don't know what that reference is, that's a whole episode we did back in series one of Over the Influence. If you are just joining us for the first time, go back. Go all the way back. Have a listen. There's loads to go at now. But yeah, for me, giving up alcohol has just completely changed my entire life. I didn't think that my relationship with alcohol was terrible. Actually, upon giving it up and looking back, I realised that it was getting to quite a bad place. I was drinking because I was stressed, whereas in my 20s, I was drinking because it was fun. In my 30s, I was drinking to try and deal with stresses at work. And it was only going one way. So this podcast came into my life at exactly the right time. I will forever be grateful for it. And we get to speak to such wonderful guests on this podcast. I am really excited to meet today's guest because Shazza, obviously, you know today's guest very well.
He's
my
mate.
It's the first time that I'm meeting him. I'm delighted. Can't wait.
It's really exciting. Really, really exciting. So it does give me great pleasure today to welcome our guest to Over the Influence. I'm pleased to tell you, actually, that he's stopped running long enough to squeeze in an hour of his ridiculously active life. Andy Delderfield, very alcohol-free, very fit, very fabulous. Welcome to Over the Influence. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How do I follow that? Listen to you two. You've been doing this a while, haven't you?
We're like old hats at it now.
No, I'm good. Yeah, I'm just over three years alcohol-free. And I initially met you, Sharon, in your early days of your sober journey.
Why are you smirking?
Well, because at one point I was actually in front of Sharon. And if I hadn't blipped and slipped in my first 9 months of going alcohol free, I'd be in front of you.
Oh, you know, sadly, what? I'd forgotten about that, Andy. Yeah, we have known each other for, well, the duration, haven't we, of our complete alcohol free journeys, and it has been, it's been brilliant being side by side on this whole ridiculous adventure. Andy, welcome to the podcast. As I said, enough about us. I want you, if you don't mind, before we get into talking about where you're up to now with your life, because safe to say, everything has changed. Absolutely everything. Yeah. I mean, even looking at you now on the Zoom call, you are literally half the man you used to be. You look so well. But just take us back to 3 years, 1 month alcohol-free now. Take us right back to where it all started, and just maybe tell us a little bit about Andy D, the drinker.
Yeah, I think I need to put where I am now in a way, as I live in Spain, because I think that's part of the story, is that I'm a expat, moved to Spain in my late 20s with my wife at that point, and she's still my wife. Still there.
You better get that in case Emma's listening.
Stood next to me still. And so really it's I think I fell into that normal male sport rugby player through my early 20s, went traveling in my mid 20s, I think, really just followed the kind of, went traveling, drinking, lots of drinking in my 20s, continued into my 30s with moving to a foreign country at that point as well. So falling to the expat kind of lifestyle. Yeah, we had kids, got two children. And as an offer, I think from the outside, moved to a foreign country, had the house, had the wife, had the business, kind of all looked fairly good on the outside. But actually on the inside was a person going into their 40s, really losing a bit of control, not necessarily knowing he was losing control at that point. Didn't necessarily realize how deep or dark it maybe got. But yeah, like I say, from the outside, I think normal, standard weekend binge drinker, Thursday to Sunday. But yeah, got to 40 and just it started to get a little bit darker, I suppose, at that point. And you've referenced already the running and the exercise. I stopped playing rugby in my late 30s and found running. And I think only now am I realizing that possibly in my early 40s, I was running away from my potential problems and where I'd got to, and maybe just running away from being an adult and being a father and being a responsible husband and all those things. And I think I used alcohol to hide away from that. I didn't necessarily, like I said, I didn't know that at that point. And I started running around that time. And it wasn't until a couple of years later, 2017, I ran the London Marathon, which I think was my second London Marathon. And I do remember that was a fairly, even though it was in my head, I think was a potentially high point, because it was almost proving to myself that I was doing the exercise, but the reality really was, as I was running Monday to Thursday and drinking Friday to Sunday and repeat. And during the training for that, I detached from my family. I detached from my responsibilities and didn't, but was in the middle of it and thought, actually, I'm out running. I'm amazing. Yeah. I'm turning up. I'm getting fitter. But actually, yeah, after running the London Marathon, I realized I detached quite a lot from family and things. And it kind of went a bit dark at that point. And I suppose during that time, I was waking up on Monday mornings, kind of doing the whole never again, not doing that again next weekend, not doing it next weekend. Thursday would come along and the cycle would start again. Yeah. And then by May 2018, I got to the point where I looked online and started asking the questions about, how heavy was my drinking? Did I have a problem? Where was I at? And I decided to try and reset it a little bit. And so May 2018, I made the decision that it was the time to try and take a break. But I think for the previous year, 18 months, I'd been kind of waking up most Mondays, kind of telling myself that this had to stop. And the only really way was, even though I tried to moderate, was that it had to be a black and white decision. It was all or nothing.
And we hear so much of what you've just said there about that seed being planted 12, 18, 24 months before people say, you know what, here we go. And actually, again, you know, you're somebody else. It's the same as myself and Ben. None of us set out to be alcohol free. You're like, right, I'm just going to do this flipping break. I'm just going to have a go, see how it goes. But that's where it starts, isn't it?
Completely. And really, I was trying to do a 3 months. 3 months was, it was, let's just see if I can have a break for 3 months to see where, but not really even at that point to see where it was going to go. It was to have a break so then I could potentially, yeah, continue drinking, but in a more moderating state. And I never, ever imagined where the road was going to lead from there. And like I said, it took me 9 months and of learning, which primarily around the beginning, it was holidays. I just could not disassociate the glamour of the holiday and having a drink. That just seemed to be an impossibility. It was, how could you ever not holiday with that alcohol? How was that even possible? And that was what was my kind of bit of my Achilles heel in that first 9 months, is every time that moment came, which was a bit of a break, a bit of a holiday. Yeah. So I started in the May, and I purposely booked a family holiday to Dubai in the July. So we did a 7-day trip to Dubai, thinking that if I go to Dubai, there's no way I'll drink there because it's so blooming expensive to drink. So it'll be easy there. Just so happened England were in the World Cup that summer, and we got to the semi-final, and I'd watched the whole game in the semi-final. I think it was against Sweden. We won, or in the quarter-final, sorry, we won. And I went straight to the bar and spent 15, 20 euros on a pint of Heineken. And that was my first slip after 57 days, I think I'd done. And then it was the summer, and then it was the difficulty of sunshine, Spain, expat. Fell back into the kind of, there was always an excuse, isn't there? And always an excuse why today wasn't day one. Why, well, I'll leave it another week. I'll leave it another couple of weeks. And then I think I did 120 days running up to the Christmas of 2018. And it was your first Christmas, Sharon. And I remember you got through it. And I drank the Bucks Fizz on Christmas Day.
Hey, listen, doesn't matter.
Can I ask a question that I totally get might be impossible to answer? This is my first question, the impossible question. You said that you didn't realise how deep and dark it had got with your drinking. We are the ones who are doing something differently. You know, in a society where alcohol is everywhere, we're the ones who are living life in a different way by not drinking alcohol. Let's say that we lived in opposite land and it was all flipped and you were the only one who was drinking and everyone else wasn't. Do you think that you would have spotted it earlier? Do you think you would have noticed that it had got deep and dark before you did? Or do you think that kind of that whole expat community, being surrounded by people who are living the good life, they've moved, they followed the dream, and of course the wine's out every night because we live in the dream, we're in Spain. Do you think that kind of looking around at other people and being within that drinking culture meant that you couldn't spot the signs?
Yeah, I suppose because I've been alcohol free now for over 3 years, I look at where I was and I can see the evidence now fairly easily that, and still, did I have a problem? Was I any different from anyone else? And possibly not, but I suppose by being. Yeah, I love the analogy of climbing outside the jar. And once you get outside the jar, you can look back inside, can't you? And until you get out, you can't see it. And I think it's very much that, isn't it? Is that for most people, until you get to that point where you actually have a break, you can't see how it's affecting your life. You can't see where the detrimental effects of it are.
Totally. Because we're quite resilient as humans, aren't we? You know, yeah. I remember I'd go to work with a terrible hangover and get through the day. You know, I'd feel crap doing it, but I'd still do it. And I didn't get fired. And, you know, it was kind of like it was laughed off at work.
It's a badge you wear with honour, isn't it? Yeah. It's part of our society and part of, what makes... And I think probably within the male part of it is what even more so, where there's this kind of bravado with it. And it's And again, when you're in it, you don't see it as much. But then I suppose when you step away and you look back, it's almost... yeah, it's emphasized even more so of how it's affecting, how it affects you. And I think for me now, it comes down to control. Control's been one of my, I suppose you get asked, don't you, what are the big things that, what are the benefits of being alcohol free? And control for me, and I think the beauty of about the word control is that I think you look at it when you're drinking, you aren't in control, or that you lose that ability to be in control. And actually, when you start looking into the science of it, as in alcohol impairs your judgment, as in that's one of the things that alcohol does to you. And it's scientifically proven that that's part of the process. But when you remove it, it's how you then gain control of everything. And for me, it's the knowledge that everything that comes out of my mouth and everything action that I do now, I can own and take full responsibility of. And I think when I go back to three, four years ago, it was that lack of control that was getting me into trouble. It was the bad decisions because I wasn't in control of my decisions. And it's very easy, isn't it, to blame alcohol for that. And we accept that. As in, that's a justifiable reason, isn't it? That it was because I was drinking.
It was Drew Charles in the very first series of this podcast that said every bad decision I made started with one beer. And when he said that, I thought, oh my God, that's when I was still kind of moderating and thinking about going out, not actually doing it. I was like, oh God, Drew, that's me. And what you're saying about losing control, you know, we've done it talked about it on the Young and Sober podcast. I'm not sure if you heard them with Charlie and Joey, but in the last one, they were talking about blackouts and saying that, you know, Joey woke up in the middle of a row. He blacked out. And then suddenly it's not like you've lost a bit of control. You've lost complete control of everything in that scenario, which is terrifying, isn't it?
Well, I'm actually reading a book at the moment. It's actually a newish one. It's called Drink by Professor David Nutt. I don't know.
You've been reading it.
I haven't got this.
Oh, it's good.
I feel left out.
Ask you, Andy. I've just got my copy.
Yes, I've got my little copy.
Have you got little tabs in it, Ben.
Color-coded
tabs. And I've literally used more tabs than pages. I'm not quite sure how I've done it. There's something on every page that's amazing.
But you were just saying about blackouts. I always thought that we forgot when we were drunk. That it was a blackout, as in a blackout meaning that you forgot what happened at that point. But actually the science around it is that one of the side effects of drinking is we block one of the, I'm not very good on my science, so synapse, whatever it is in the brain, but you actually stop laying down the memory. So you actually lose the ability to lay the memory down in the first place. So it's like it never happened. And I always thought that you just became forgetful, that you forgot it, not the fact that your brain actually never lies the memory down, and is the reason why we repeat ourselves so often, is because we don't actually remember even saying it, because the memory was never laid down in the brain in the first place, that's just scary, isn't it?
we've been talking on the premium pod, Andy, about the effects of alcohol on the brain, on the body, on your mental health. And it sort of ties in with what you're saying. Until you stop, until you actually remove it from your life, you don't realise how bad it is and what an impact it has on every single aspect of life. I mean, I can look back now with crystal clear vision thinking, God, I've wasted a lot of time. I've wasted a lot of time thinking that alcohol was the be all and end all. But in order to, it just sounds so naff, in order to experience alcohol-free life, you've got to stop drinking. And it's like this cycle, isn't it? This circle, this terrifying circle, actually, where you think, can't do that. And I think that's why we all set out to take a break with a view to going back to it, because why would anybody want to live a life without alcohol? But like you, Andy, you did 90 days, you got to 100 days, you start to feel the real deeper benefits of what it is like to be sober. And that is where the magic starts to happen, isn't it? And you can see forward a life without alcohol as opposed to harking back thinking, oh dear God.
And I think what you just said, we're saying by looking at the negatives. So the negatives of drinking, that is that feeling of lack of control, or that you've not got that, or the actual physical effects and the mental effects to your brain. But actually, like you just said, as in when you get to that 100 days, and I know you talk within your community, as in it's the 100 days is, we say where the magic starts. For me, the magic started happening when I got to a point where I actually turned around to myself and other people and said, I don't drink anymore. As in that was the moment when I got to a point where I couldn't find a reason to have a drink.
Or an excuse.
So when you get to that point where the positives outweigh the reasons to have a drink, and you can confidently just say, well, actually, there wouldn't be an occasion in this world at this moment which would justify me having a drink. So that's
when did that happen for you then, Andy? Because for me, that was day 366. Like, I was always going to have, I started on 3 months and I was going to have a drink on 3 months. And then I went, I'll do six. And I was going to have a drink on six. Then I thought, well, I might as well do the year. And I fully intended to have a drink on day 366. But actually, that was the day where I went, why on earth would I? You know, they've seen so many. When did that happen for you? Because it's obviously different for everyone. But that kind of confidence to say, I'm never going to drink again.
I've never said I'll never drink again.
Right. Okay.
But what I've said, because I don't feel the never bit is I don't want to say I'll never drink again, because you don't know what could happen or what could change. But as it stands at the moment, there's that general feel, that feeling inside me is that I cannot see a reason why I would drink. So if that reason never comes about, then I'll never drink again. And it comes down to, I think as well, I got to a point where I realized as well that if I was to have a drink, I wouldn't be doing it for myself. I'd be doing it for other people, which was to fit in on a society kind of level. So it was more to satisfy other people's needs for me to fit in rather than my own. And I think when I realized that as well, that was a moment where something's changed here in my head. As in, So when did that happen? I don't know an exact moment, but yeah, the difficulty I had, I hit three a year as we went into lockdown. I think there's a natural progression with your alcohol-free journeys that we all have, which is that I think that first 12 months it's a lot of, just don't drink. Yeah, that's the main kind of purpose of that first year, I'd say, for everyone really is. And if you try and do more in that first year, often I think that's where maybe the overwhelm happens, and possibly you might end up drinking because you try and do too much too quickly. I think year two for a lot of people is where you start exploring outside of the new life that you've now discovered. And for me, that was where my running increased and my fitness kind of really started kicking in. But we went into lockdown, so that kind of really messed that up, and actually ruptured my Achilles early during lockdown as well. So I then didn't do very much exercise for about 8 months. So my year two was taken away from me. So I've really had then a bit of my third year became, I had to get everything I was going to do in year two in and year three. So I had London Marathon in October. I then ran the Valencia Marathon in December, and then I've just ran the Paris Marathon 10 days ago.
Of course you did. you've missed one bit out as well.
I have, because that was the three marathons that I've done.
This little cold one.
We'll come back to that. Andy, thank you for skipping over quite beautifully the debacle that was our October marathon. When I say ours, I came and clapped. I clapped quite loudly. I found it quite exhausting, actually, watching you all run. So very well done.
Can I ask, I hinted at this at the beginning, can I ask which one of these marathons was the marathon where you listened to Over the Influence back to back for the full 26 miles?
I mean, that's dedication.
That was in Valencia in December.
Yeah. Wow. When Shaz said that, I was like, seriously?
He didn't.
Yeah. No, I binge listen to you whilst I'm running all the time. So, because I've not been running very much over the last few weeks, just the marathon in Paris, but not very much training. I haven't been out doing lots of training. No, you've been in my ears for the last 18 months on all my runs. And I wanted to actually touch on that, really, is that, yeah, you started doing this podcast when I hit a year
lockdown
alcohol free.
Yeah,
so I'd already got to my year. So really, you've been then with me for year two and three. And I think one of the things I want to thank you for is, I think you've obviously helped an awful lot of people on their early stages of their journey, but I think you've also kept a lot of us later on as well engaged within the alcohol-free space and the importance to keep on working at it. Yeah. Keep on reminding yourself, because it's difficult. It's not an easy thing to do in the world we live in. And actually having you banging on about it every week, and especially since season three, that's gone on forever.
The season that never ended.
That never ended, still going. Yeah, it's been absolutely brilliant. And so thank you for that.
Andy, awesome. I get emotional, honestly, when anybody says anything nice, particularly somebody like you, Andy, you know, who I've known from day one, you know, from your day one, and I know I've seen the struggles, we've seen each other's struggles, and you're right, it's not easy, but the payoff is, it's life-changing. And I think what you said there is really, really key. Yes, people do start listening to Over the Influence and do come to the community in the really early days, and it can be so overwhelming, and we will try our very best just to hold your hand, you know, to hold your hand and connect you with other people and support and inspire and all the rest of it. But it doesn't stop. It really doesn't stop. I still need help. I still need reminders and inspiration three and a half years on, you know, not that I'm ever going to reach for a drink, because I don't drink anymore. It's as simple as that. It changes how you view alcohol. Your whole life changes, in fact. But we've got members in our community, Andy, that four, five, six, 7 years alcohol free.
And yeah, one of them seven.
Yeah. And I think it really bothers me, and it really still upsets me, that these people have obviously made a lifestyle choice. Okay, they don't drink anymore, and yet still they feel isolated in society. They feel frowned upon. They still feel that it can be quite difficult. And, you know, if us banging on in your ears for bloody God knows how many weeks helps, then that's why we do what we do. So thank you. You know, that's really kind of you to say that. And yeah.
Andy, do you feel like the culture's changing over 3 years of doing this? Do you feel like society, is it more acceptable to not drink now than it was before, do you think?
I live in Spain, so I've obviously got a bit of a cultural difference possibly to the UK, and the Spanish don't get it at all. So, it's a different way of drinking here, which is that I often say that they don't binge drink like we potentially do in the UK, but they drink early morning and just kind of continuously topping up. So alcohol is ingrained into the society here massively, differently to the UK, but certainly, yeah, very, very into everything that happens here. So it is very difficult. Within the expat community here, yeah, there is a bit of a change, but I think I surround myself with people that are kind of running and stuff. So there is a bit of a different sort of, yeah, mentality there. But still, it's still very much, yeah, everything is alcohol driven. It's made it easier a little bit with the last couple of years and not having such a social situation as much. So we've been going out less and things like that. And I have to say, my wife Emma kind of, she says she misses Andy, drunk Andy, a little bit, but she also remembers, yeah, the bit she doesn't miss. But we've got older as well. I think we've just got maturer with it, I suppose, as well. It's kind of gone from my early 40s to my mid 40s now kind of, yeah, 46. And I think I just, my life has changed, as in I get yeah, my fun stuff out of other things now, as in it's kind of, yeah, my running, my crazy kind of challenges that I set myself, and that's more important. And I think family's just become core to who I am now. So my immediate family, so my wife, my kids, and actually that's the most important thing. And I don't need to be chasing after friends in bars and doing all that sort of stuff anymore.
Andy, you're aging like a fine cheese.
I'm glad you said cheese. That. Well, is he though? Is he? Or are you losing the plot? Because what did you do a little bit?
I mean, come on. You've got a podcast about this, Andy, which you should plug because it's nuts.
Come on.
The whole thing's nuts.
I mean, alcohol-free life does open up a lot of opportunity and a lot of windows, and people do start to, they tackle their own Everest and things like that, whatever it might be. It doesn't need to be marathons or whatever, but you went one step too far. Andy, tell us what you did.
So in February, I went on a supported, well, what was classed as an ice ultra challenge. So it was a 5-day, multi-day event, totaling 230 kilometres over 5 days in the northern extremes of Sweden in the Arctic Circle.
Why? Why would you do that?
Well, this is just for everybody, obviously we've got some Cuneys members watching this recording. For those of you who can't see, Shaz looks really cross at the moment. What are you doing? What are you doing that for?
Why? I just don't get it.
I was asked why before, and then I'm being asked why after I've done it. It's equally as difficult, I suppose, to give you a genuine answer. All I can say is that I think what it's done for me is it's shown what I'm capable of, not just physically, but also mentally. And I think one of my things I live by is I want to face my fear. I think it's really important to face fear. And whether that's on a day-to-day basis, even just walking into a social environment and mixing sober is facing a fear. For me at times. And so doing something like this is facing a fear in the fact of doing something where you can't train for it. You don't know what to expect. You don't know how your body's going to deal with it. And I'd never even, as in January, I ran my first 50 kilometer run. So I'd not done any long distances over a marathon, as in I've done marathons, but that was where I'd stopped on roads as well. So I'd never run off tarmac. So in January, I started running on trails in where I live locally, and did a couple of 50K training runs, backed onto a 30K the next day and like a 20K the next day. So I started building up this endurance over multiple days. But when I got there to Sweden, I had no idea what to expect. I think I'd been to Canada in my early 20s and it got to minus 15 or minus 20. It got to minus 36 was the coldest it got to on the first day, which because you're moving, because I was it was meant to be a running race. I trained to run it, but sadly 2 days before we arrived they had 2.5 meters of snow dumped across where we were. And so they had snowmobiles. They went out and laid the tracks that we ran on. But because they'd had all this fresh snow, it was very soft. So this was all done in snowshoes as well. So we had snowshoes on our feet as well. So it was quite challenging.
Andy, did you come back with everything that you left Spain with? Because that's the kind of temperatures where things start to drop off, isn't it?
Yeah, I did. On the first day, I said it got to about minus 30, 32, 30, yeah, 36, I think maybe. You didn't realise how cold it was. The first day, it was about minus 20 for most of the day. But because you were moving, and actually on that first day, I ran a fair amount. Well, when I said ran, as in this, as fast as you can on soft snow with snowshoes on, it's fairly challenging. And we, the first day was, it was 50 kilometres was day one. And I'd done, yeah, got to the fourth checkpoint and it was getting later in the day. So the sun was setting. And we were going on this hill. I think I was in the last 10 kilometres on the first day. And it was cold, but it wasn't horrendously cold because you had the kit. So I had all the layers on and everything. And the sun was setting down in front of me. I was climbing up a hill and the sun was setting over the top. And I was trying to get to the top of this hill because I could just imagine this beautiful sunset in front of me. Didn't make it. So I stopped on the side of this hill, put my poles in the ground and took my gloves off. put my Miata gloves on the end of my poles to get, and got my phone out because I wanted to capture this sunset, and took a couple of pictures of the sun going down, and my phone just went off because it was so cold that the batteries just go into kind of like, it's too cold for me to work, I'm just going to shut down. So my phone shut down. And because I've been moving quite a lot, I hadn't really realised how cold it was. My hands are getting a bit cold. Kind of got my phone back into the bag and realised that I had my inner gloves on that I'd been sweating in, and the inner gloves had frozen where it got so cold so quickly. And then I'm like, okay, so I got my outer gloves, thick gloves back on. They'd frozen as well where they were wet inside. So I got them on, and then I had 8 kilometres left that day to get in before, to finish. And there was no more checkpoints. And I'd had cold hands previously, in the day when we stopped, and they would warm up after about 20 minutes, they'd warm back up again. But because the actual gloves had frozen, my hands never warmed up. So I think it was about another hour and a half with frozen hands, and got in that night. And my wedding ring finger was not quite right, and it was very painful. So I got the medics to kind of check it. I actually ended up damaging 5 out of my 10 fingers. Ooh. And had nerve damage in the ends of them. And I still my thumb on my right hand, I've still not got any feeling in my thumb. They're coming back.
Think it's could okay. be your feet and your legs that would be suffering, not your fingers. That's incredible.
Yeah. But that was my stupidity, because I didn't realise how cold it was. And I think the key bit was what you learned quite quickly, was that it was just very changeable, as in the conditions could just change so quickly. And it was a very small race. There was only 34 people running in it, and 13 of us finished it.
Andy, what an achievement.
I think the main reason people dropped out was the fear. I just managed to get into a mindset where I just believed that I was going to complete it. There wasn't any huge risk.
That's incredible.
Hello, this is Ben from Over the Influence, and just want to take a quick break from this episode to tell you about one fabulous feature of our online community, which is OTI Chat. It's basically like WhatsApp or Messenger on Facebook, but it's built within the OTI platform, so only people who are OTI members can use it. It's really good. You can do one-to-one messaging, you can do group messaging on there. Our members really love it because by meeting people through the Zoom calls, by interacting in the forum, they're getting to know people. They're starting to build friendships. And OTI Chat is a really good way to keep in touch privately with people. You don't have to give your number. You don't have to give any of the details. It literally is all built within the OTI community platform. People use it for all sorts of different reasons, but it's particularly useful when it comes to having a kind of wobble. If you've got a dodgy moment, which we all have, you know, you don't just tick a box with this whole alcohol-free life thing. You've got to keep in touch with it. You've got to keep on top of it. And that is a really good way to do it. So look, there's loads of other benefits to the OTI community, but this is one of my favourites, OTI Chat. If that sounds up your street, if you want to connect with other people who are on the same mission as you, who have the same purpose, then please join us over the influence. .co.uk. And right, that's enough for now. Let's get back to the episode.
Can I ask you a question about when you're actually doing this ice ultra, and you are, you know, literally, you know, you're on your own. Yes, you're supported, but it's you and your mind, isn't it? And you've got this enormous challenge. Do you still get those waves of like relief and gratitude, and as you're going along the ice, you're going, I don't drink anymore, I'm doing this because I'm alcohol free. I still get them waves. Admittedly, it's more like when I'm walking to the co-op for a few ice creams, or I don't know, I might be just around the local park with the dog.
It's a really good job that you two know each other and Andy's not hugely offended right now. But when I'm at Round Park with Doug, just like when you were doing the ice marathon.
When I go pick up a Magnum, it's a bit chilly on my hands when I took wrapper off. I want to know, while you are putting yourself, you're putting yourself through probably the most difficult physical challenge you've ever done, aside from the 3 million marathons you've done as well, Andy, which is, it's all just incredible. Does it still register? Does it still go through your mind? I'm doing this because I stopped drinking back in 2019.
Yeah, completely. And I think this last 6 months that I've just been through. As I said, because I almost felt like I got 2020 taken away from me a little bit with the challenges and the things I'd set. And then we talk about it's important to set challenges, isn't it? When we go alcohol free, it's not really the challenge that's the important bit. It's the journey to get
you've
there.
You've said the J word twice on this podcast, I love Andy.
We pretend that we don't like it. But we use it all the time because it is a journey.
It is a journey.
It is. Journey's different.
But the challenge is the end point, isn't it? Or maybe it's not the end point. I don't feel like I've got to an end point with these challenges at the moment because I'm on a path.
Different journey, different path.
Different junctions and choices of where you go next, isn't it? But I've lost my train of thought.
Can I ask my question then? Because it's kind of similar to Shaz's, but also slightly different, which is, did you enjoy it? Like when you're out there and, you know, you've been running for hours and hours and hours. Last week we had the Sober Trekker on the podcast, Miles, and he was talking about the difference between type 1 happiness and type 2 happiness. And I'd never heard this before and I loved it. Yeah. The idea is that if you haven't heard it, type 1 happiness is that kind of synthetic quick fix happiness that you get through alcohol, drugs. Yeah. You go up quickly, but then you crash just as quickly. Type 2 happiness is the happiness that's earned. You know, it's, for example, running through Sweden in minus 35. Did you enjoy it? Did you feel that kind of type 2 happiness? You did?
I so did. Yeah, as in it was gratitude. That was what I was trying to get to. And gratitude isn't something... Oh, I think I always looked at it. It was like people who've got a gratitude journal. Yeah, it's saying the three things you're grateful for each day and things like that. And it was always a bit woo-woo for me. But over the last 12 months, I've realized that the reminding yourself of what you're grateful for on a regular basis is just so, so powerful. And completely, when I was in Sweden, it was grateful for having the opportunity to be there. It was grateful for my family to allowing me to have the space to go and do something that I felt I needed to do. Grateful for being alcohol free, for finding like-minded people to share this journey with. Grateful for the natural surroundings and the snow and just having two legs, having two arms, being able to run, all of these things that I now remind myself on a daily basis of. So yeah, completely in the middle of it all, gratitude was really high up the list of something I felt at that point, and just felt so lucky and privileged to have the opportunity to go and do it, and then to share that through the community that I'm in and the connection I've got with lots of like-minded alcohol-free people to show that anything is possible. And it's not about me doing 230 kilometers. It's about the fact of stepping outside of my comfort zone and facing fear, however big or small it is that the reward you then get is just amazing. And all of this comes from making a decision 3.5-4 years ago to give up alcohol, which I never ever believed was result in me doing these things that I'm doing now. And that all comes down to I talk about as in one of the things as in I've mentioned that I've done my coaching qualifications with Andy, and I think as long as I don't want, I'm not plugging myself too much.
I want you to plug it at the end of this. Absolutely, we do.
It's something that I'm launching at the moment and developing, and I'm very much in the early stages of it. But I've got my website is just developing now, and I'm trying to work out kind of some concepts a bit for me of what I've learned through my alcohol-free experiences. And I think people ask, what are the plus points? And I've kind of based it around, it keeps on coming back as it's a consistency is something that you guys talk about as well. As being a massive thing. But what I've managed to work it out is, and I mentioned control before, so I've actually got this kind of concept around C's. They all seem to begin with C. So I've come up with this four C's that I keep on going back to, and it's really consistency, control, clarity, and connection. and my four C's, and then your bonus C that really holds it all together is that compassion and that self-compassion that you get. So by going alcohol free, you get to take back your control, and that's control of everything you do. You get your consistency, which then by having that consistency, we all know that if you turn up and consistency over time, that little bit every day results in magic happening. That clarity that is the scary shit bit, yeah? As in for all of us, when we first go alcohol free, is living
really confronting, yeah.
That magical world in Technicolor. Yeah. So you say about life in Technicolor, yeah? As in having to deal with that, but then learning the skills around that and then how that becomes a massive positive because, yeah, you're living life in that sober world where you're finding pure, real happiness, not something that's induced by a drug. And then, as we know, connection is that opposite of addiction, is connection. And it's so true. And the connection then that you get because it's sober connection, which then means it's so much more real. And you can be vulnerable with it and you can be real about who you are and connect with people. And that all linked in with that compassion, which is the self-compassion that you get by being sober, is that you start to learn to love yourself and actually... It's often the doubt and the hate feeling maybe that you're running away from, and is why we drink a little bit, is to hide away from that because we don't want to deal with it. So, yeah. So that's, I've been working on that a little bit just for my coaching stuff and trying to get, yeah, as in that's all those positives that I see that's come about me being alcohol free, which results in me being able to say, why would I ever drink again?
Well, our community are cheering your C's. Janet says, love that, Andy. Kelly, love that, Andy. Sarah, absolutely superb, Andy. I love all those C's. So obviously you're onto a good one there, Andy. A cracking one.
There's loads more. If you keep on going, you can...
I've had a mind block. I'm trying to think of loads of words beginning with the word C and I can't. Oh, there's one.
I can't think of any.
Andy, we've got some of our community members watching this, and as Ben said there, they are loving all those C words. It's brilliant. Absolutely fantastic. Susan has put a question in the chat box. What's the answer to this going to be? What is 2022's next sporting challenge?
I've got a bit of a break. I've actually got a couple of months to calm down a little bit because it's been a bit of a crazy 6 months. But I've managed to get a place in the London Marathon again in October. I'm going again just because I'm hoping someone else might be doing it this year who keeps on deferring. I don't know who she is.
Andy, I don't want to talk about this. I didn't want to mention it publicly, least of all on a podcast that's listened to by thousands of people across the world. We'll discuss this off air. I might have a place, but I'm struggling to even admit this. So I might see you in October at the start line.
Are you going to? Are you serious?
Yes.
Because I'm. Yeah.
Yes.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, we need to get that order in then, Shaz. We need to move that order forward. All of our OTI flags.
Yeah.
So you can tie an OTI flag around you at the finish line.
I'm not doing it unless you are there at the finish line.
I think you can get those webcams that point back at you. We could just watch you the whole way. So that would just be.
Oh my God, let's live stream it.
Live stream, yes. Shatter.
Oh, there's so many
Andy,
ideas.
That's the worst thing I've ever heard in my life, that you could watch my pain for probably, well, I'm going to say 7 hours.
The comments are coming in already. Wow, good for you, Shaz. No backing out now, Shaz. They're coming in.
Kelly says, don't cut that out, Ben. Cut that out, Ben, please. Cut that out.
I purposely came back last year to run with Sharon because we were meant to be running in 2020 together. So this has been going on now for coming on for two and a half years that Sharon has managed to defer her London Marathon place. She launched a pandemic in 2020.
Seriously, anything to get out of it. I can't believe you brought that up. Right, enough about me. Let's get back to Andy and his running and everything else that he does. Andy, it's been an absolute pleasure. Personally, for me, as I said at the start of our chat, we've known each other from day one, and it's been a joy. And to hear you share where you are up to now from where you were, you know, quite anxious about alcohol-free life and thinking, I can't bloody do this. You know, you, me and everybody else that starts out on this journey, it's been an absolute pleasure. And I feel, at the risk of sounding really weird, so just bear with me, I feel really proud that you're my friend, and really proud that you've cracked this. So sorry for sounding weird, but I mean it.
Well, I think we've cracked it as well. Yeah, as in you've cracked it as well. Look how far you've come. And then background Ben.
God. Who'd have thunk
yeah,
it?
as in are you coming up to 2 years, or have you?
Yeah, yes. Yeah, 2 years in the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I can't believe.
I was a bit sad today. I've actually been listening to some episodes today whilst I've been in work, because I've been in the office on my own. And listened to your episode, which was the last episode of season one, where you announced you were going to go out
no
free.
Way.
So, yeah.
Oh, that's yeah. Brilliant.
And honestly, at that point, you've spoken about fear. I was so full of fear. You know, I've just, Shaz, like you've just done with the marathon, I'd announced to the world that I was going to do this thing. Yeah. I didn't know if I could, you know, but it's test, like, you can, anyone can do this. And Andy, what you've done is amazing. Not everyone has to, like Shaz says, everyone's got a different Everest, haven't they?
Yeah.
It's been great to meet you. I know that you and Shaz go back a long way, but it's been great to meet you today. And I think, you know, you doing this absolutely crazy nuts thing in Sweden, the next time I feel a bit scared about something, I'm going to think of you. So
think of Andy taking his gloves off in minus 35.
all for Instagram. What, the things we do
Instagram.
For the gram.
It's all for a photo.
Andy, before you go, I think it's really important as well that actually you do give your coaching business a plug. I know, like you said, you're sort of putting the final steps together now. You're getting your website launched and all the rest of it. Should people want to get in touch, where can they find you? And just share your website and share your social media handles, if you have them.
Not very up on this. My website is actually launched and it's live. So it's www.
We can drop the W's. Just give us the rest of it.
It's just called actually alcoholfreecoaching.com.
Does what it says on the tin.
Good one.
So
nice.
So that's the website. And then I've got my Instagram is Andy Sober Journey. So it's actually Andy's Sober Journey, but it's only got one S in it. So it's Andy Sober Journey. Which I'm very new at, and anyone who can help with Instagram.
Yeah, don't look at us.
I don't think it wasn't designed for people born in the 70s, was it? I'm sure they didn't design it to make it easy.
We're getting to grips with it. It's taken a couple of years.
No. Yeah. And then I've got a Facebook page, which is Andy Dowderfield, the Alcohol Free Coach.
Andy, that is brilliant. Alcoholfreecoaching.com, and it will provide links to your Facebook as well and to your Instagram. Andy, it's yes. been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming to chat and Over the Influence.
No, thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Over the Influence. If you enjoyed what you heard, if it is inspiring you on your alcohol-free journey, please do feel free to leave us a review. The more people we can reach, the better. It's why we are doing this, singing about the unexpected joys of sobriety and sharing the rubbish bits as well. We couldn't do it without you. Please do leave us a rating and a review on your podcast provider. If you want any more information about what we do, drop us an email, otihq@overtheinfluence.co.uk, or feel free to take a look at the website, overtheinfluence.co.uk. Thank you so much.